Stay tuned for The Lynn Show. Today, I'm going to talk about your inner DJ and the way your unconscious uses that to give you information. And I'm going to play an interview I did in New York City with jazz pianist, writer, singer, Elliot Roth. So, hang on. Here comes the show. Welcome to The Lynn Show. If this is the first time you're tuning in, I'm going to tell you a little bit about what to expect, both from the show in general and from this show in particular. In the first half of these shows, I talk about why you can't always do what you want to do, why there are changes you want to make in your life that you can't make. The information that I'm giving you here is all coming from a book I wrote called When You Can, You Will, Why You Can't Always Do What You Want to Do and What to Do About It. And that information is all coming from my 30 years in private practice as a psychotherapist. I know that this concept can be difficult for some people to accept because we live in a culture that says, if you just want it and you try hard enough, you should be able to do everything. Emphasis on the should. I like to call this the Nike culture, you know. Just do it. Just say no. Unfortunately, while that is what we would all like to believe in, why Nike's making so much money with that as a slogan, it just isn't true. And I've seen over and over and over again people who badly want to make changes in their life have tried everything they know to do it and still cannot. And so, based on the information that I have gotten from all of these struggling folks, including myself and my friends, I wrote this book. And in the first half of the show, I talk about the concepts in the book. At the moment, I am in the middle of the book, and I'm talking about your unconscious and how your unconscious protects you from changes you're not yet ready to make, and the way it talks to you, which is different from the way your conscious mind talks to you. So in the last few shows, I've been talking about some tricks that our unconscious has, ways that it communicates with us, which, as I said, is different from the way our conscious mind communicates with us. I've talked about the Freudian slip. I've talked about forgetting to remember. I've talked about the wandering mind. And if you missed those shows, or if you heard them and you want to hear them again, you can get them on my website, which is cleverly thelynshow.com. That's thelynnesHOW. You have to use the E at the end of my name or you get a different Lynn. Today I'm going to be talking about your inner DJ. I think this is really self-explanatory. We pretty much all, I mean, I don't know anybody for whom this doesn't happen, so if it doesn't happen to you, please go up on the Lynn Show, click on Contact Me, and tell me that you're the person to whom this doesn't happen. As far as I can tell, we're all having an inner DJ. Songs which occur and which we can't get out of our head. We're humming all day. They're recurring, you know, it's just going on and on. For some people, this is very, very upsetting. Some people think of it as an intrusion. You know, it's an annoyance. They don't like it, and they want it to go away. I think of it as a gift from our unconscious. I believe that the songs that we are humming, sometimes, you know, that's the last song you heard on the radio, and you like it, and so it's going on in your head. This is kind of in the same ballpark as when Dr. Freud said a cigar is sometimes just a cigar and not a phallic symbol. Sometimes the song in your head is just that. You like it, you heard it. But for me, most of the time, the song in your head is a message from your unconscious. Often, it's something we either would like not to know, maybe it's something that embarrasses us, or something that tells us something that requires us to do something that we don't want to do. If it were something that was really clear and something that we could easily accept and act on, it would come to us through our conscious mind, the person we think of as I, the thoughts in our head. If it comes to us in this subtext way, this subtle way, this not clear way, as a song, usually it means the information that's coming to us is in some way difficult for us. My favorite example of this is when I was first starting out as a therapist. I was interning. I was not yet licensed. And I was assigned to treat a young woman. She came in, and I didn't feel competent to treat her. But I believed that I had to treat everybody who came into the office. This is something, it says something about me, and it says something about the training that you get as a therapist. So I sat there in the office listening and bouncing back and forth in my head from, oh my God, what do I do here? And, well, you'll just get supervision on this and you can treat it. And I don't really feel okay about this. And shut up, you know. And you need to be able to do everything, and so you need to be able to do this. And I was completely unresolved about this when the session was over. I scheduled another session with this young woman. And I remember I left the office I was working in, and I was walking towards my car in the parking lot, and I heard my inner DJ loud and clear, "Go away, little girl." And because I believe in the messages I get from my unconscious whenever I am really able to hear them, I thought, oh, well, this is absolutely the right answer. I went home, got on the phone, called my supervisor, and referred this client to another therapist. This particular piece of information was something I didn't want to have because I wanted to think of myself as somebody who could do anything you know, could treat anyone. But in actual fact, that was not true for me. And that particular instance went on to have a real impact on the way I worked in the future. It became clear to me then that I almost certainly couldn't and certainly didn't want to try and treat everybody and everything that came into the office just because they did. That there were limits to what I felt really competent treating. And later on, I found that there were limits to the amount of hours I could be a therapist in a week. Again, all of this, the idea that there were limits on me, that I didn't really want to acknowledge, all were contained in that message, "Go away, little girl." And of course, the minute I got the message, I stopped humming the tune. You know, it went out of my head. So, are you one of the many of us who has an inner DJ? Are you annoyed by it? Do you listen to it? Has it ever occurred to you that there might be a message in it? Are you willing to consider that possibility? Well, all right, that's the first thing I like to do in this show is talk a little bit about what gets in our way and what it is inside us that's helping us and protecting us. In the second part of the show, which is about to come up, I've been doing a series of interviews with artists. I've called the interview series Anatomy of an Artist, and I've been interviewing people who make their living or their life with some art form, and also people who support the people who make their living or their life with an art form. And in this month, I have been interviewing exclusively pianists, mostly jazz pianists. And in this show, I'm interviewing a young pianist who's also a singer and a songwriter and a poet, as you will hear. His name is Elliot Roth. As I have said, I heard him when I was visiting in Pittsburgh. I went into a little jazz club, and there was Elliot with his piano and his father playing percussion. He's not that young. He's about 25. But by comparison to the other pianists that I have been interviewing, Dick Hyman, who is 81, Elliot is young. So I was in New York last week, and that's where Elliot is currently living. And he came to my hotel room, and we did this interview. And you can hear that we're disturbed in the middle of this by somebody ignoring the do not disturb sign on my hotel room. You'll hear that towards the end of the interview. So in addition to playing the interview, I'm going to play several songs that I like to play. Whenever I interview a musician, I like to play their music. And in this show, I'm going to play one song that you will recognize, hopefully. It's called This Can't Be Love. And at least one, maybe two, depending on time, of songs that Elliot composed himself, music and lyrics, and of course he's playing all of them. So, actually, I think before I play the interview, I'm going to play This Can't Be Love, so you get a feel for who Elliot is at the piano. And then I'm going to play that interview. So, here is This Can't Be Love, played and performed by Elliot Roth.
Can't be love because I feel so well. No sobs, no sorrows, no sighs. This can't be love, I get no dizzy spells. My head is not in the sky. My heart does not stand still, just hear it beat. This is too sweet to be. Oh, this can't be love. I get no dizzy spells, and still I love to look in your eyes.
Being in Pittsburgh, I talked about seeing you play and how impressed I was.
Oh, thank you.
You're very welcome. So, all I know about Elliot is what I saw that night. So, I don't know anything about him. So, that's a little unusual for me. Mostly, I have more information about
background
the
info.
Well, I know or know of so many of the people that I'm interviewing. So, I don't remember what I told you. I'm doing this series of interviews.
Mm-hmm.
It's called Anatomy of an Artist.
Right.
And really, it's interviews with people who either have or are making their living or their life with an art form.
Right.
And it seemed pretty clear to me that that's what you're doing.
That's about it.
Yeah. Right. I don't have questions and I don't have an agenda.
Okay.
The interview goes where it goes. It's pretty much whatever you want to say, but what I'm mostly interested in is how you got to be who you are, how this happened to you, how you found it, what you plan to do about it.
Right, right.
Pretty much anything that you want to say about it.
About music, my music in general.
Yeah, and your relationship to it.
As a kid, you have these, like, well, this week I'm going to be a this, or this week I'm going to be a that. I mean, it went from being, I mean, like a policeman. Like, it went everywhere, you know. And I knew right off the bat, my father was a huge influence, who you met.
Yeah,
there,
yeah.
And huge influence on me musically. Because,
oh, let me stop you.
Yeah.
The night that I saw Elliot play, his father, Randy, was playing percussion behind him. He was great, your father.
Oh, yeah, he's great.
Yeah, he's a great percussionist, and he's also an interesting guy. I mean,
yeah.
He's interesting to watch.
Right.
You know, he does this odd, interesting stuff when he's playing.
Absolutely.
So was he a professional musician?
Yes, he still does that. He teaches,
yeah,
he's been teaching from a home studio for about 25 years, and then he also has done gigs all around the nation. Usually he just does a weekend stint a little locally now.
Yeah, okay, so you had a working musician for a father as you were growing up?
Oh, yes, absolutely. Uh-huh. And he's another one, that's all he's ever done. That, I mean, it's been music, you know what I mean?
Like, yeah, yeah.
He stopped the odd job thing at about 19 or 20, and then it's been music ever since.
So. Wow, very unusual.
Yeah, really, especially with music. I started out doing Suzuki piano, so I was a big memorizer.
Very young.
Very young, three.
Yeah, oh, my God,
so,
yeah. Right.
Started off the bat just memorizing. And
memorizing?
Music. The Suzuki method, one aspect of it is that it teaches you to master very large works at a very young age, and you spend a lot of time on those pieces, memorizing them, listening to recordings of those pieces. So it's the misconception of Suzuki is that Suzuki students are not very good sight readers. So I had a teacher that did that hand in hand with me, which is very, very beneficial. But between that and then my father is extremely eclectic with music. When I introduce people to artists that are a little more obscure, I like to tell them some of the time that my father got me into these artists. Like Bjork is one of them, you know, and she's been a constant inspiration to me lyrically, and gives me hope that if Bjork can still sell out Madison Square Gardens and be that off kilter, then there's hope of freedom of expression and having an audience for that. So
yeah,
but Yeah, growing up, I listened to a lot of different styles, classical, jazz, everything. And I think between that and having this ability to memorize and listen to something and being able to play it, that was really helpful.
Can you do that now? Listen mm-hmm. to something and play it?
Yeah,
most
of my work, especially in New York, my job right now calls for that. And most of my work, and I think the ability I'm most confident in as an artist, there's this constant criticism of yourself. And one of the only, I think, artistic traits that I embrace is something that makes me truly stand apart and I feel confident about is my ability to listen and play back those things that I hear. Everything else is a work in progress, but that is something that has been developed and is...
Solid.
Solid, yeah, definitely. So,
you think, for example, that as a performer, you're a work in progress?
Absolutely. Absolutely. God forbid, right?
Yeah. You'll have to see Elliot to know that you're a very accomplished performer.
Oh, thank you. Thank you very much.
You're adorable to watch. You're interesting, and you sound good, and you do interesting stuff.
Excellent. I appreciate that. Really. Thank you so much.
Didn't anybody tell you?
not as of late, no.
I'm really glad to be able to do that for you. Because it's true.
Thank you. It's true.
And you can hear all the influences when you play.
I'll let you in on a little secret. It's been suggested my whole life that I go the piano route from my dad, my grandpa, and everybody that's known me pre-college.
Right.
And the piano is my tool, but my passion lies in writing and singing. Mm-hmm. And even in my undergrad, I always studied voice was my primary instrument. I did piano on the side.
Yeah.
And that's one thing that not a lot of people know. But in the academic world, where I go to school now, or I'm doing graduate school, and
you're
then also...
You're studying voice.
Yes. And it's been a constant inner battle between what am I actually good at. The reason people are pushing this piano thing, is it because, you know, there's a lot more weakness in my vocals? And then I realized that, you know, there's a lot more work as a pianist, you know, at times. So sometimes that has something to do with it, but...
Wow, this is really interesting. This is really interesting
yeah.
to me because, for one thing, you sound great, and you sound like you have an awful lot of vocal control. You know, I mean, that's not a small thing. That's huge.
Yeah.
I mean, and you're all over the place. You've got a huge range.
Oh, thank you.
You know, I mean, so I'm really surprised to hear this, and also... It brings up this question whether because somebody is naturally or easily good at something, must that be the thing they do?
Mm-hmm.
So were you singing when you were younger? Or
yeah,
you
absolutely. Probably it was simultaneous. I mean, I remember I had a second grade teacher. I auditioned for my first musical when I was about 8, and I remember it was so exciting. I was just this little angel in Joseph Technicolor Dreamcoat, but it was...
Literally angel.
Yeah, literally, yeah. I was a little angel. And I had a second grade teacher, I remember... Peggy Crane was her name, and she told me, Elliot, you just have the voice of an angel. That was the first time I think I remember being...
complimented for it.
Yes, and the first time I really started to pursue singing, you know, and I didn't study voice until... I was just a sponge with anything I could get. I like to say I studied voice, but it was through word of mouth. If I had a musical director that was pretty acclaimed in the area, I would pick their brain. If they were a voice... I guess pedagogue would be the term. If they mm-hmm. were a teacher, I would pick their brain. I learned how to project, sing from my diaphragm just by asking as many questions as possible.
And yeah, well, it shows.
Oh, thank you.
I'm a singer, you know.
Yeah, absolutely. Wonderful singer.
Oh, well, thank you very much. Yeah. But, you know, I mean, I've got a recording of me at 18 months singing.
Yeah.
So,
oh,
I mean,
wow.
I've been singing all my life.
Right off the bat.
And I know what it can mean to sing. I know what it feels like to sing.
Right.
I know that amazing connection. I don't actually even have words for it.
Right.
That when you're singing, that you're lost in it, you know.
You're absolutely right.
Right. Now, I can't play. Well, I can only, you know, I have got this very limited ability to play, right? So I don't have that for playing, although... when I've written something, I'll play it over and over and over
again. Absolutely,
you know,
yeah.
And I just
yeah.
love it. So I'm asking you to talk about the difference between being a singer, being lost in the performance, the making of the sounds with your voice,
right,
and the making of the sounds with your hands.
Mm-hmm.
Is it different?
It is, well, when the two are combined, to talk about a work
yes.
in progress, but I would say there's a huge difference. The biggest difference being as you know, as a singer, your voice, it's an internal thing, and
yes.
It's probably the only instrument that isn't reproduction into an inanimate object. You know what I mean?
No, that's right.
It's coming directly
it's
out
your,
of you.
It's literally you.
It's you, and emotions affect that. So much affects it. Your ear is a huge part of being a singer. I mean, I'm doing a lot of, in the jazz world, they call it out. There's a lot of out stuff right now. I'm like learning about it, investigating just dissonance, chromaticism, and the
what does that mean, out?
Dissonant. I would say dissonant, a lot of chromaticism, things that aren't quite
they
pleasant
don't quite right.
to
yeah,
the
yeah,
general
yeah, yeah.
ear, you know?
Right, right, right.
And it's very difficult because I'll
as in outside.
Out as in off kilter.
Yeah, outside the norm, right,
absolutely,
right,
yeah. And in this class I was taking, the instrumentalists that come in, they play these incredible lines, but every button, every key on their instrument is assigned to a note. As a singer, to find those pitches, you have to be able to hear it, recognize it, and then relate it. Unless you have perfect pitch, which I don't. I have very developed relative pitch, but I don't have perfect pitch. And it's much more challenging as a singer, I think, and being somebody that plays the piano and sings, I will tell you how what a mastery it is if you're a singer with a good ear and able to recognize things. It's a really difficult thing to develop. I mean, especially when singing in a band, because there's a lot of protocol that sometimes people assume you know, waiting for solos.
Yes, I
you
know.
Selling
I
like
know.
The song, listening to the band members instead of just quacking. You know?
I know.
And it was a thrill to really play with you because you were right there with me, and that was
you
really,
were right there. With
yeah,
me.
No, exactly.
We,
but
never,
we were interacting, and that's important
right.
in this realm, especially to interact musically, you know, with each other.
Yeah, well, that doesn't happen all the time, and when that happens, it's particularly terrific. And it's also, that's a different skill altogether. Accompanying
Absolutely.
is a completely different skill.
It certainly is.
You know, and not that common.
Right.
You know, because
right.
a lot of piano players can't accompany.
Oh.
Well, I mean, they can play behind somebody, but they're not
but
really.
It's not accompaniment.
That's
yeah.
right. That's right.
right.
And it's interesting. Maybe it's because you're a singer,
mm-hmm.
and because you know that the music that's being played under you matters. It impacts what you're going to do vocally.
Mm-hmm.
You know. So, because you know that for yourself, that you would do that for somebody else.
Right.
So, do you accompany much, have you?
A lot. A lot, yeah. Now, I guess I'm back to sort of doing a lot more of that, but my whole life, just playing for others, singers, I always had that that muse, kind of in high school, I would write a lot for a male or female singer that they're usually a friend of mine, because, you know,
yeah.
we all hung out,
mm-hmm.
same type of crowd, you know,
right,
and
right, right.
these people, I'd accompany a lot for them, and I'd play... Just playing, breathing with each other, and I noticed that there, as a teacher now, once I did a lot more teaching, I realized that there's such an interesting difference between accompanying a classical singer and accompanying, I'm going to use jazz, you know, because jazz involves a lot of phrasing, and you're actually pushing ahead. You're not quite following. Following is the fact that you're not, you know.
That's
and,
right, yeah, yeah,
and
yeah.
In classical,
yeah, yeah.
I would say, I don't want to use an extreme term, but classical, accompanying an opera singer, for instance, can get incredibly sensuous, you know, because you're breathing with them. And I remember one time I was playing for it was a Brazilian piece, like an art song, and I was playing with it for the singer, and we got to a fermata in the music, and we both went,
oh,
and it was just incredible.
Oh,
it was
my
incredible.
God.
What a moment that was. So I'd say as an accompanist, there's a lot of different, you know, ways of doing that. And classical, something I haven't done a lot of since my undergrad, and I miss that. I'd like to play for some more classical singers in the near future.
See, now this is something I don't know anything about.
Mm-hmm.
And I would have said, I'd have gotten it all wrong. I would have said that it was less creative
right.
to play for a classical singer because you have to play exactly the same thing.
Right,
It's what it is. You can't, you don't got any flexibility or,
right.
you know, there's no leeway.
Absolutely,
right. But when you're playing for a jazz singer,
mm-hmm.
It's evolving minute to minute. You don't know
because
I may not phrase it the way somebody else phrases it.
Exactly.
You know, and so I would have thought that would have had, but I wouldn't have known the other thing because I could never be a classical singer for all kinds of reasons. One of them being that I can never do anything the same way twice.
Absolutely.
So.
No, trust me, and I'm right there with you. Especially my life in general, routine scares me a lot. You know, it really does. I'm not a.
When's your birthday?
Routine. August 10th.
You're a Leo.
Yes.
Wow. Oh, August 10th.
Yes.
It's next week.
Coming around exactly. It is.
Right.
Coming up here.
It's
so.
Also my stepson's birthday.
Oh, okay. All right.
Mm-hmm.
Cool.
Leo, what a wonderful sign for you.
Yeah, it works. Works well.
Yes, it does. And you are. You're very. You're. Yeah, you are. That's great. It's great.
Okay.
That was a compliment.
I hope so. Yeah.
Yes,
no,
don't worry.
Leo's get some...
bad rap.
Yeah.
But not as performers. They never get a bad rap as performers.
All right. Well, all right.
Because that's what they are. It's
yeah.
natural.
Yeah. Yeah,
know?
I guess.
You've got your hair standing up.
Oh, yes. Absolutely. Always. It's my hair. That's my trademark. One of my... That's
well,
my
it's very Leontine.
Oh, yeah. That's interesting you said that. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay, so the other thing that you said, and I really want to talk about, is the writing.
Right.
So we're talking about music here?
Yes.
Music and lyrics? Just
yeah.
music?
Oh, definitely lyrics and poems, whatever.
So, yeah. Oh my God, triple threat.
Yeah, well, I have to be, I'm really much more of a lyric person than
You're
music.
You're kidding.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
Now that is so interesting and so
yeah.
odd and so unexpected.
Yeah, yeah, it's
Since you, your initial, since it was all about music first.
Right.
I mean, before there was a lot of words, there was music.
Right, right.
Wow, so where did that come from?
I would say, I mean, it's around the same time I started really singing, I mean, wailing, belting, you know, as a little kid, I loved poetry, and I'm extremely, still am, I mean, I'm getting better at dealing with it, but I'm still a very sensitive person, and I think I take things, I really analyze and psychoanalyze things, and I realized when I was really young, I remember we used to have report cards that also had behavior things on them in elementary school, like behaviors to work on, and one of them was like me being extremely sensitive and like Ellie needs to not take things
so
seriously
personally.
And so personally, and I think that really helps. I take everything very, I mean, I wouldn't say criticism, and I wouldn't say that because I love criticism, as long as it's done with, you know,
yes,
tact, I guess, you know,
right.
but I,
it's not malice.
Right, exactly, mm-hmm. but I'm very, very sensitive about things that happen, people I meet, and as a writer, that's been so helpful, and I've gone through a lot emotionally in the past 10 years. I mean, I've far more to go through, as my, you know what I mean? But enough to have a couple books of just lyrics and poetry. That, like, you know what I mean? Like, so I like to just get it all written down.
You know the F. Scott Fitzgerald line? He was in some love affair that was horrible, and he wrote, oh my God, you know, the affair was horrible, but I got a paragraph out of it.
Okay, I've heard so, yeah. That's excellent. Oh my gosh. It's true.
It is true.
Oh,
it's
God,
absolutely
it's true.
True.
Yeah.
Okay, so, I had a question. My mind, it's a sieve.
We're talking about lyrics.
Oh no, I had a question that didn't have anything to do with that, and that's why.
Okay.
It was a non sequitur.
Oh.
Do you have siblings?
Yes.
Uh-huh.
I have a younger brother who gives me the advice that an older brother would give you. He's extremely mature, and he's a great singer. I mean, didn't really pursue that, but we started piano together, and I always forget that, but we started playing piano together around the same age. And his incredible, great musical ear and great voice, baritone. He's a writer, but in journalism, being very politically conscious. And he just finished up at American U. So he's interested in international politics, and he speaks Japanese very fluently. So our personalities are very different. Yeah, but Sam and I come together with our sense of humor. And that's how our family works. There's four of us, my brother and I, my mom and my dad. And
so where is your mother in this dynamic?
My mom is, oh geez, she's a smart lady. Oh my gosh, she's a special needs teacher and also played a good bit of piano. In
really?
High school, yeah. For
okay, so this is a very serious family.
Yeah, I would say serious, committed.
Yes.
I would say it's committed, yeah.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah,
so. Are you doing much writing?
A lot. I get into these depressing writer's blocks where I'm just like, everything I'm creating, there's that constant voice of, like, an evaluator, especially when I first moved up to New York, I was doing a show about Sinatra, and there was just constant people, constant audience, and having that idea of, like, audience gratification, the performer side in me, there's something like, I can't write unless it's honest, and I'll just stop, because I'll start writing, and then I'll think of a hook, then I'll think of, oh,
yeah.
I wonder what so-and-so or this audience would think of this, and then I just stop, because I'm like, okay, now I'm catering to an audience, and I'm filtering
that's
what
that
should
sensitive.
Be coming out.
That's that sensitive thing.
Yeah, it is, and it really hurts my writing process for
okay, so
months
now,
at a time.
where do you think you got that?
The
stop
sensitive
for a second,
side. Yeah.
And just think about it.
Okay. Where did I get the sensitive side? You mean from a family member, per se? Or just?
I don't know. Where would it have come? Is either your mother or father very sensitive?
I wouldn't go as far as to say that.
No, I believe you.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay, so then you didn't role model it.
No,
okay.
I don't believe I role modeled it. And that's interesting you asked that, because I always think about that, about my parents. And there's many things that normally people would get from a relative or somebody they're close
right.
to. And I'm very environmental about things like that. It's more
what do you mean?
Things that I'm surrounded by, either groups of people or atmospheres or things as I'm growing up.
You're sensitive to it.
Yeah, that influence me a lot.
Right.
A lot more than a specific person, I think. So,
situations. So you're the oldest child?
Yes.
How many years between you and Sam?
Three. Well, I guess it's two and three. You know, it's about 3 years, so, yeah.
Okay, so you were a year and a half when your mother became pregnant with him?
Yes.
That's pretty young. Okay, you have no idea how come you became so sensitive. Did they comment on this when you were little?
At times, yeah. At times, I think. But I'm not really sure how. It was just my whole life, and things are great now. It's interesting to look how I was and how I've used that to my advantage as I've gotten older and it put it forth, and I've matured. I've grown out of some things, but there's a lot that I've retained as well, you know, now. And it's interesting to think about that point in my life when I was just all out. Everything worked me up. You know what I mean? Teenage angst.
And so now you're going to use all that, right?
Yeah, well, this is a great time in my life to be doing this interview right now because, I finally have established things called affirmations, life affirmations, you know what I mean?
Things that I
never felt mature enough to really grab onto.
So this is what I hear you saying, that that you're feeling as though things that were not possible before are possible now.
Yes.
Is that what you're saying?
I'm saying that, and I'm also saying that things that I have life philosophies now that are set. There's so many more to be developed, but I have things in my life because I believe with friends, and I had a friend that was struggling for a while, and I told her about the idea of permanence, and I believe everybody needs, even if they're young, because it's so easy to fall into, oh, I'm always changing and growing, but there's things that need to be permanent in your life, and that I'm finally establishing the things in my life that I know are permanent and coming up with some life mantras and things like that.
Do you mind saying some specifics about this?
Things that are permanent?
Yeah.
I would say I feel loved, definitely by my family, and I have a very small, close-knit group of friends, and it's important for me to express to them, especially when they're going through times of trial, that our friendship is permanent. And most of my good friends, two of them live in Pittsburgh, one of them lives in Chicago, and the reason permanence is such an extreme thing for me is because people that are close to me, most of my close friends are artists, and they're constantly moving around the world, really. And it's important to hold on to the idea that that's permanent when you're missing the physical aspect of that person being right there. So
it's another solid thing.
It is, yeah.
It's another solid thing. I think it's interesting. I don't think I've ever heard anybody say that before, Elliot. And I think that it's really true. I was thinking as you were talking about that, I lived in Los Angeles for a long time.
Right.
And my best friend is still there. Mm-hmm. I don't live in Los Angeles
anymore. Right.
But my best friend is still there, and that's a solid thing.
Absolutely, right.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, it's real important. Mm-hmm. Is there anything else that you would be willing to tell us about that you think of as permanent?
Yeah, absolutely. I'm pretty sure that I'm an artist. I perform because when I first moved here, and over this interview, I will not knock New York. I will not knock the people I've met in New York, but I will say that I met some people that are exclusive performers.
What does that mean?
It's solely based in audience gratification. I believe that people that perform,
performer yeah. as opposed to artist.
Yes, and I believe that people that don't even write but are singers. Our artists can be artists, you know.
So do I.
Right. But I believe that there are people that are exclusively performers, and I met some people that are strictly willing to only talk to me if it were based on how they can network through me or how I can network through them.
This is about using other people.
Yes, and that was something I realized. I knew these people were out there. It wasn't a total culture shock, especially when I moved here, but when I fell into the cabaret scene very quickly when I moved here. And,
yes.
It was just, I met some very...
it's real interesting.
Yeah.
My own take on that mm-hmm. is that I have reason to know not just performers do that.
Right.
People.
There's a certain kind of person. Yeah.
And also, I suspect that comes mostly from insecurity.
Oh, absolutely. A lot of these people are, being presumptuous, but I feel like I'm a fairly good read on people, and a lot of them were oozing insecurity, you know, based upon overcompensation.
If you're always looking at other people for what they can do for you, instead of what their relationship with you is, then you don't have a very strong sense of your own
absolutely. Yeah.
Well-being and worth.
Yeah, right.
So you don't have to worry about that.
Okay.
Okay, so what do you want to do? Do you know?
Well, it sounds so simple when I say it. I knew this. You were going to ask this question because I was thinking on the way over here. She's probably going to ask me, what do you want to do with yourself? You know?
Well,
I think I want to create. I want to create. I want to do as many different things as I can before I die, whether they're music-related or not music-related, because it's all an inspiration to me. And that has been something I've really established, especially in the past year, is I really want to experience as much as possible around the world. I want to continue to be more and more cultured as I get older. And in terms of a career path, I mean, I would love a record contract. That's something I need to establish right now. But I definitely want to be able to have the freedom to create at all times. I love working with dancers, choreographers, modern dancers, writing with them, doing performance art. I'm a really big fan of that, so hopefully I can run into some of those people that I had met in Pittsburgh a couple years ago. So
it's wide open.
Yeah.
Wide open. So when you said with music or without music, what exactly did that mean, or did you
know? Life experience. I mean, things that I can just check off, right? Exactly. Like skydiving, you know, this museum and this part of the world. Like, I've been watching, I'm a big addict of the show Andrew Zimmern's Bizarre Foods. And I'm watching that thinking, oh, I want to try this sometime,
you're your mother's son.
Yeah, I really am with that kind of stuff.
And actually, who do you think you favor primarily, your mother or your father?
My mother and my father. It's very different because my father is my music.
Right.
You know,
right,
we're music. And my mom, I think it's more
this analytical, intellectual thing.
Definitely. Right.
And Sam, where does he fall?
Sam is Sam keeps me on track, believe it or not.
I think, believe it.
Yeah, Sam really keeps me on track because he has.
Sam
has.
Yeah, well, close it. Yeah, but it's got the do not disturb sign on it, doesn't it?
Because usually, sometimes when it's open, some people leave it open and they leave their room. So I just want to shut it.
Thank you.
So I won't have to be stolen. All right.
Edit.
no kidding. We're in a hotel room where the do not disturb sign apparently doesn't mean a thing. Oh my God. Well, we either will or we won't. Sometimes I leave this stuff in.
It's interesting.
It is.
It's real.
Real. That's right. And I'm all about it.
Okay.
I'm all about the real.
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay, so take a second and think about yourself and your work and your life and New York and anything that you would want to say about what it means to be an artist, what it means to be a performer, what you might like to tell the world, what you're about, anything.
Yeah. Okay. Well, what it means to be an artist, I think it's really, really important to always be continually, like I use the sponge metaphor all the time, but I think just constantly be a sponge and know, have friends from all walks of life. And that's something I realized, that it's easy to get into the habit of only being friends, or immersing yourself in a world of people that are exclusively artists. You want to be in the scene, I mean, you want to get work, and you want to know what's out there and get inspired, but I would say, as an artist, it's so helpful to deviate from these things, like go out, go for a run down to the park, you know, like sit on the beach, like read a book about something, I don't know, about cars, something that's so different, but that you might be a little interested in, and I think that's really important to me, to try to expand my horizons outside of that artist box, because even though I'm an artist, I have artistic freedom, I think being an artist can be being in a box at the same time, so I wouldn't know if I call that advice, but that's my...
Yeah, it's real interesting. And it also speaks to a very high level of permission that you have.
Mm-hmm.
You have a terrific amount of permission to be who you are, to pursue what you want.
Right.
And one has to get that from one's parents.
Yeah, definitely. Definitely.
It's really lovely.
Mm-hmm.
It's really lovely. And I think in the sense that you live in a global world now.
Yeah.
And really everything is available to you now.
Right.
That you really are a work in progress because there's no way to know what influences are going to come, what's going to enter your life.
Right.
And you're open to all of it. It's terrific.
Yeah, hopefully. I'll see. But thank you.
You're welcome. You're welcome. And the sensitivity, that's probably a good thing for you.
Mm-hmm.
You pay for it, but it's probably a good
right.
thing.
Yeah.
I don't have anything else to ask. Do you have anything else you want to say?
Well, a big thank you. I mean, this has been really helpful for me. I mean, especially being able to express some of these things to somebody that is a third party, you know? I mean, my close friends are sick of it by now. Or, you know, you're hearing me. Another work in progress for me is not learning to not wear my heart on my sleeve so much to people. And I think this is the type of openness, I guess, I like to give to people that I'm just meeting. Or, you know what I mean?
And I do, and it's an interesting dichotomy. The desire to share, the desire to be open, the desire not to have barriers, right? And at the same time, to not to want to be inappropriate, and to know when other people want that and don't want that, because not everybody wants
Absolutely.
That.
Absolutely, yeah, totally.
That's a dichotomy. You know, that's something that one has to play by ear, kind of, right?
No, so true. Yeah, right. Absolutely.
Right. Well, thank you so much, Elliot.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you.
Well, that was Elliot Roth. Just a complete delight. And if you've been listening to all the shows, and especially if you listen to my next show, I'm going to be interviewing someone who says that she is celebrating her 72nd year in the business. So we've got the bookends here. And I can't wait. I haven't done that interview yet because she's on the road. I said, oh, my God, you're still on the road? She said, honey, if my feet hit the floor and my hands hit the keys, I'm okay. So I haven't had a chance to get the full story yet, but I will, and you will hear it next week. And then you'll have the polls, you know, Elliot, really at the beginning, even though he started 22 years ago, really developing, becoming, exploring, you know, all that energy and passion and optimism and hope and apprehension. And then we'll see what it looks like at the end of the career. Or, well, I don't know, you know, maybe she could go on forever. I want to say about Elliot that what they say about people like Elliot, which is you will certainly be hearing more from him. And in fact, you're going to hear more from him right now. I'm going to play a composition of Elliot's, a song that he wrote and that he's playing, and it's called It's You.
Because it's you, like the wind when the sky
And that's Elliot Roth. Pretty terrific. And I'm going to play one more cut of Elliot, a very, very different sound, so that you can get a real sense of all of the different kinds of things that Elliot can do. We talked about it in the interview, and I'm going to play another song so you can see another face of Elliot Roth. I want to thank again Josh Hackney, as I always do, and tell you, as I always do, that if you have any interest in things electronic, recording, web, computer, that you want Josh, he is the guy. And you can get in touch with him by going up on my website. You can do all that other stuff on my website as well. And if you weren't listening earlier, the website is thelynshow.com, thelynneshow.com. And I am hoping that you got something from this show that you can use, you can take with you and makes your life better, or something that entertained you or engaged you, something that makes you want to come back and listen again next week, because I will be here again next week, and I sure hope you will be too. And now, once again, to take us out of this show, here is Elliot Roth singing and playing "It All Comes Down to Love."
Like another bright morning star, never gonna bring me down. My life, my way, in life, a place I know I've been before. Never felt I could ask for more. Shake me there again. I know it's familiar, and it waits when rain pours through. I'm gonna be there too, holding on. My love, peace, the kind that's making time stand still, reminds me of a face. No dark clouds gonna come my way, a lot like feeling safe. Dark eyes, blue skies, when I look on shining from above, when I don't know what waits, it all comes down, all comes down to love. And lately, I'm lying awake, trying to find an answer in a silence louder than words. More than in a side street sound I've heard, where's the pain come from? I pull myself together, oh, walking downtown when the night comes round. There's so much going on, and still I'm singing my song of peace, the kind that's making time stand still, a lot like feeling safe. No dark clouds gonna come my way, reminds me of a face. Dark eyes, blue skies, when I look off, shining from above, when I don't know what works, it all comes down to love. Oh, I can find an answer for righteous way to live.
taking all the pain, the shame, to sacrifice, to give a heart. What is life when all is fueled by all that's stripped away? I'm a counting on dreams, counting on faith, counting on a time I say. Shining from above, when I don't know what awaits, it all comes down. All comes down to love.
Tune in again next week, when I'll continue to talk about our unconscious and how it protects us, this time by using its favorite trick, that of camouflage. And you'll hear one more pianist. Well, you'll probably hear lots more pianists if you continue to listen to the show, but this month, all dedicated to pianists. So hopefully, I'll see you again next week.
I won't slip out of sight, no. I will not go gentle into that good night. I won't go with a whimper. I am going with a bang. Life's a song I keep on singing, not a tune that I once sang. I just keep returning like some goddamn boomerang. No, I won't go. That I have had my shot. My time has come and gone. Oh, won't I please get off the stage? Let someone else get on. Well, I won't be relegated or leave without a fight. No, I will not go gentle into that good night. I won't with a whimper. I am going with a bang. Life's a bell I keep on ringing, not a chime that I once rang. You may think it's unseemly. Well, I don't give a dang. No, I won't go with a whimper. I am going with a bang. Rising from the ashes, I may be running out of time, but it ain't over yet. 'Cause me and Sister Phoenix, we won't give up the flight. No, no, we will not go gentle into that good night. And I won't go with a whimper. I'm going with a bang. On singing, not a tune that I once sang. I may not be as juicy, hell, but I still got some tang. So you won't hear me simper. I may have got